Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hey, we're up and running once again on Connecting Faith. Good to have you along. Hope you've had a great weekend. I was glad to have you along as we enjoy times to talk about ways we can apply biblical principles to daily life. And here at Faith Radio, connect faith to life every day. That's what the programming and the ministry is all about. Good to have you along. I'm Neil Stavem. Ted Ross at the controls. Happy Monday, Ted.
Yes, so. Yeah, I was enjoying our conversation there, and then we realized, oh, we have a radio show to do here. We're going to hit the air.
I hope that you will enjoy our conversation today as well, because we're going to talk with a very dynamic young leader who's got some great insights and things to share as we talk a little bit about a couple things. The spiritual danger of doing good. That's kind of a provocative title to one of Peter Greer's books. And then we're going to focus a lot on the latest one that he's co-written called Mission Drift, The Unspoken Crisis Facing Leaders, Charities, and Churches. And without careful attention, faith-based organizations drift from their founding mission. It's that simple. It will happen, I say.
Wow.
So we're going to get into that. Mm. Do want to mention, I don't know how you're doing on your New Year's Bible reading plan, Ted. You keeping up?
Yeah, I'm kind of used to my regular meeting time with God in the morning. You know, it's kind of regular and set. I always could go deeper, though.
Yeah, we've been offering, and we'll continue here for the next several weeks, a free Bible reading planner. It's called the E100, the Essential 100 Bible Reading Planner. It's a daily planner. Actually, it includes 100 selected scriptures from Scripture Union that are Bible passages, both Old and New Testament, that will give you a big picture of the Bible without getting bogged down. So if you've already, what we're trying to do is avoid February. It's called Bible Bailout Month.
Mm-hmm.
About that time, if you're reading the Bible through a year into the Leviticus and going,
they give up.
Not doing it. So this is a way that you can join with us and look at these key scriptures. You know, not that reading the Bible every day isn't important, but here's a way that maybe you can just get back into the Bible if you've kind of bailed on your plan already. So why not just sign up online, myfaithradio.com, and get your free Bible reading planner, and we'll just spend some time reading together.
Sounds good.
All right. Let's get into today's topics. We want to talk about mission drift. You know, we've all, I think, heard some stories. Maybe you know some organizations, or maybe you've been on the board of one or something, part of one, and you just wonder, how do we keep solid convictions at the forefront? Well, our guest today is going to help us discuss that and dissect that a little bit. Peter Greer joined Hope International in July of 2004, following extensive education experience in the field of microfinance. In fact, it's really a pretty amazing story. The young college kid got pretty excited about really making a difference in the world, and Hope International has just grown. It's an amazing organization. And Peter came back after working overseas to get a degree in political economic development from Harvard University's Kennedy School, and an honorary doctorate from Erskine College. And he's written a couple of books, including co-authored The Poor Will Be Glad, The Spiritual Danger of Doing Good, and our topic today, Mission Drift. Peter, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thanks so much, Neil. Really privileged to be with you.
So when we talk about mission drift, I mean, what we're talking about, and I know you did a fair amount of study, you and your co-author, Chris Horst, just looked into this, and I assume that part of this was your concern for your own organization. Say, how do we keep the founding principles of Hope International going in the years to come? Is that right?
That's exactly right. Really, there was a supporter of Hope International who said, Peter, if I support you today, how am I going to make sure that what you do 5 years, 10 years from now is still with the gospel of Jesus Christ at the very center of the organization? And then he went on to list other organizations that started with a really clear and passion about the gospel, and yet over time gradually walked away from their founding identity. And he wanted to know, how are we going to be sure that that doesn't happen to you and to Hope International? And so originally the goal wasn't to write a book. The goal was to do some research and try to answer that question for ourselves. How do we make sure that we don't follow that well-worn path to growth, to professionalism, but somehow lose sight of what matters most? And so the book Mission Drift is really the summary of several years of study and research about organizations that drifted, but more importantly, about organizations that we found that stayed mission true.
Well, maybe we need to just define drift, because obviously there's, you know, times when you realign business priorities or, you know, focus or emphasis. So maybe what's the difference between drift and just a little realignment?
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting examples just from the business world is the example of Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo was founded to be a stagecoach company. Now, how in the world is a stagecoach company still in existence today? And the answer is, as they continue to look at their identity, they said, we are not in the stagecoach business. We're actually in the business of helping people transport what matters most. And so for them, it wasn't a commitment to stagecoaches. It was an understanding of who they were and what they were created to be. And the stagecoaches were just a means to accomplish that goal. And that, you know, might be a silly example, but how many other stagecoach businesses are there in existence today? It's not a good business model today. And yet, I think for a lot of organizations, it's so important to differentiate the means by which they accomplish their mission from the very mission itself. And so that really is the starting point of this issue of mission drift. What are those things that you hope 10, 20, 50, 100 years, what are those core elements of identity that you hope are still in place? And then the question is, everything else, how do we hold that with an open hand? So for Hope International, we want to make sure that our mission is about proclaiming the good news of Jesus Christ and doing it in such a way where we're help people work their way out of poverty. The tools that we use might change, but those things of our core identity, we hope really are solid in terms of who we are. And that's what we found of great mission true organizations. They knew who they were, and then they held everything else lightly of how they accomplished that core mission.
Now, as you said at the outset, part of this came for you, for your organization, as you visited with a donor who said, you know, how can I be confident that things are going to be as you proclaim now, 5 years from now? But there's always that sort of tension, isn't there, when you're talking with major donors or maybe, you know, appealing to a foundation for a grant? I mean, talk about the money influence in this whole area.
Yeah, we found that mission true organizations, those organizations that were able to scale, that were able to professionalize, but were still able to take hold, to keep hold of their founding identity, they understood that growth was not their primary goal. And so even if a donor came and said, I'm willing to give you this very large check if you'll do X, Y, and Z, if X, Y, and Z are not in alignment with their core purpose as an organization, the mission true organizations were willing to walk away. And we had that experience at Hope. There was a large publicly traded company that had several individuals that were funding us, and they were ready to write a very large check. But in one of the last meetings, they said, for us to fund you, you've got to stop talking so clearly about your faith. The Jesus stuff is polarizing, and so we love what you're doing for poverty alleviation, but just don't talk so much. Just don't do that sort of the spiritual work, and then we can get alongside you in a much more significant way. And for us, that was a moment to go back with our board and to clarify who we were and who we want to be. And in that particular case, we made the clear decision that we just in good conscience could not accept those funds because it would require us to compromise on our core identity. And again, that's what we found with mission true organizations. They knew that their mission was not for sale, and they'd rather walk away from a growth opportunity than to take an opportunity to take funding if it meant that they would be watering down or compromising on their core identity.
You know, that sounds good now, but I suppose if you were in the budget review process and you said, you know, the bottom line really could, I mean, we really need an investment here, or maybe there's going to have to be layoffs, or we're going to have to, you know, scale down. I mean, that, you know, I would think there was probably a little unsettled stomach for a while on that one.
There absolutely was. I don't know any nonprofit organization that could not use additional funds, would not have opportunities to do more good. And again, this was part of our study. We found that money, though, is money matters, and who you receive funding from has a significant impact of your ability to perform your mission. And one of the interesting examples is the example of Andrew Carnegie. And so around the turn of the centuries, he gave an extremely generous gift. He gave a $10 million endowment, and it was to be used. The income off of that endowment was to provide a pension fund for schools. And it was interesting. One of the conditions that he made on this extremely generous grant was that any sectarian institution was barred from receiving funding. So what that practically meant is any college or university that had a tie to any sort of a church or denomination was not allowed to apply for this funding. And I can just imagine, Neil, similar to our conversation here, I can imagine the conversation around the boardroom. You know, if we just stop talking about our faith, if we just kind of sever these historical ties, we could access these funds, and that would allow us to take better care of our teachers. And it was fascinating that around that time, some great universities that were founded with such a clear Christian identity ended up moving away, never to return to their identity. So Brown, Dartmouth, Oberlin, there were all sorts of colleges that had a very clear Christian identity, and yet it was the result of taking this college pension fund that ended up accelerating what many historians have written is the unintentional secularization of higher education that followed in the wake of Andrew Carnegie's really generous college pension fund.
One decision to, as you said, accelerate this rather dramatic change, and our country perhaps has never been the same since. We're going to talk more about the issue of Mission Drift. By the way, I've got several copies, I think three copies of Mission Drift to give away. If you'd like to be in the drawing for that, we'd love to have you give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Also have a couple of copies of Peter Greer's book called The Spiritual Danger of Doing Good, which tells more of kind of his personal story and in the story of Hope International. It's a great read and pretty challenging. And we'll find out a little bit more about the great work of microfinance that Hope International is involved in, and more importantly, how maybe the organization that you love and care about, whether it's a church or a nonprofit or whatever it might be, how it can stay true to mission. And if you have a question for Peter Greer, you're welcome to join us. Peter Greer is a co-author of this new book called Mission Drift, and he's president and CEO of Hope International. It's a global nonprofit focused on addressing both physical and spiritual poverty through microfinance. You can call us at 877-933-2484. We'll continue in a minute. Past the hour, talking today about Mission Drift and how you can know maybe if the organization that you love and care about is in danger of drift. And we'll find out what it means to be a mission true organization with Peter Greer. Peter, president, CEO of Hope International, and he speaks and writes on the topic of faith and international development, and co-authored The Poor Will Be Glad, The Spiritual Danger of Doing Good, and Mission Drift. We've got some copies to give away at 877-93-FAITH. Peter, I want to talk a little bit more about just sort of this idea, just, you know, Carnegie's one decision, giving this dramatic gift, and suddenly, you know, colleges, universities, and we think about Harvard, you know, started out as an important faith-based organization, and that has gone by the wayside. It can happen pretty dramatically and quickly, can't it?
It sure can. And the Harvard University is a really interesting one. One of the original mission statements of Harvard University was to be plainly instructed and consider well that the main end of your life and studies is to know God and Jesus Christ. That's a pretty clear mission statement. And even on the diploma today, you see veritas. And then around the word veritas, it still says Christo et Ecclesia. So it means truth for Christ and the church. And yet other than some Latin words on the diploma, it's really hard to see how the current institution of Harvard, although great educationally, it's hard to see how there is still a tie to the founding identity, what it was created to be.
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of us have probably been in our work, been involved in some sort of process of evaluating, reviewing, maybe developing a mission statement. I mean, there, a lot of it is sort of, it's just sort of marketing words too, right? What sounds good, what looks good on a piece of you know, direct mail or something. I mean, so how do we make sure that we do actually have a good mission statement that we can all buy into and that actually means something?
Yeah, one of the things that we found as we were looking at this issue of mission drift is that there is no one thing that you could do to make you bulletproof from the issue of mission drift. It's not one thing, there's not one checkbox you can do, but rather it's a series of what are small and oftentimes seemingly inconsequential decisions that when compounded by time lead you to a very different place than what you were created to be. And so having a mission statement is an important point, but it's insufficient. Having something that is written on your wall, if you don't have the culture, the metrics, the funding, the model, all of the other pieces that are necessary to remain a vibrant mission-true organization, that mission statement is going to be stale, cold, and forgotten really, really quickly. And so that's what we found. Mission-true organizations pay attention to the small decisions, and they realize that there's not one area, but rather it's all of the decisions that are made that either help you become more mission true or slowly sow the seeds of drift that inevitably will hit every organization.
And so, I mean, there's not really a tripping point that you could identify necessarily.
You know, we tried to summarize the book and have gotten some great, great feedback on this. But we created a survey, which is just 20 questions. And in the 20 questions, it allows organizations, leadership, boards, individuals that are supporters to go through and ask a series of questions that basically help an organization identify where they fall in terms of clarity of mission. And then intentionality of practice. And so it's a simple way of just trying to assess where you are as a team and then understand how susceptible you might be to drift. And again, those organizations that score low on clarity, they don't really know what it is that they're even protecting and score low on intentionality. There aren't a lot of ways that they are practically incorporating their full mission into their daily practices. If you score low on clarity, you score low on intentionality, you're going to be in a place where we believe you are much more susceptible to drift. And then the converse is also true. People that lead organizations that are real clear about the mission and then really intentional about the practices that reinforce that mission, we believe they are in a better spot to resist this natural tendency of drift that, again, almost every organization is going to face at some point in their career.
And is this just an issue for Christian beliefs, or do you know, nonprofits of all kinds face this?
No, we found that not just nonprofits. We found that this issue of drift is in the for-profit, is in the nonprofit. It's in the public. It's in the non-governmental. This issue of drift is an issue that affects every organization. And so the piece that makes this different for us as we looked at this is just starting from a place that says our culture is always going to be trying to pull us away from a passionate commitment to Christ. We know that's going to be in our own lives, and it also is going to be for our organizations and our missions in general. And yet what we found of the steps that you need to take to prevent drift from happening are actually some of the same steps that you need to take personally or organizationally, no matter what your mission really is. So yeah, we found broad applicability throughout the private sector, as well as with churches and charities of all different types and sizes.
We're going to talk more about maybe some of those steps that we take, not only personally, but maybe as an organization. But one of the things that you talk about it has a lot to do with the right people, and particularly maybe hiring, so whether it's just hiring staff or maybe even board appointments. Talk a little bit about maybe what questions you ask and how to actually make sure that someone is aligned with the mission.
You know, a really interesting example in that, Neil, is the story of VeggieTales. And I don't know if you know much of Phil Vischer's story of how it was founded, but yeah. An amazing story of VeggieTales. And, you know, my kids enjoy listening to Larry and Bob and hearing these Bible stories. And if you ever would think of an organization that would be immune to drift, it would probably be VeggieTales. I mean, the very way that the content is set up is that this is an organization that is about telling kids about God. And yet, Phil Vischer tells a story how he had a company meeting, and at this company meeting, he stands up and he gives the vision of the organization. And he said, I'm a Christian, and I believe the Bible exclusively holds the truth about our standing before God and the path to restore our relationships with Him. I want to share that truth with our culture. And so he says, that's why we exist. And at that moment, the president, who had been in the company, leading the company, making all sorts of hiring decisions for over 2 years, said, if that's what this is about, I need to opt out. And so it's this amazing story of here's VeggieTales with such a clear purpose. The founder was so clear of why they exist. And yet for 2 years, a president was in the position who was misaligned with the very purpose of the organization. And I believe that the natural tendency is to slowly become so excited about external credentials that we somehow lose the essential way of paying attention to what is happening in the heart of individuals. And so a hiring practice, if the hiring practice that you have at your organization is all about show me the experience, show me the credentials, and you take for granted that there's an alignment of heart purpose and heart mission, I believe that that is sowing the seeds of drift. And as hard as it is with staff, your comment about board, it's even more difficult. I've found that boards are oftentimes even worse about going through the necessary steps to recruit new board members onto the organization. And many individuals, if you're breathing and if you're able to write a large check, you could be a great candidate for a board. And yet mission-true organizations know that that is insufficient, that board membership is critical, that board members are the guardians of the mission. And so they go through their board recruitment process in a much slower, a much more thoughtful, a much more methodical process, even than they go through with hiring staff, to ensure that the guardians of the mission, the board members themselves, fully understand, buy, and are willing to protect that core purpose for which the organization was created.
Getting some great insight today from Peter Greer, as we talk about an inevitable, as we've talked about, you know, the culture is always trying to pull us away from our core beliefs, certainly as followers of Christ. And so how do we guard against that, not only personally, but professionally in our work, in our churches, in our ministries, faith-based organizations, and without careful attention, drifting is going to happen. We're talking mission drift today, the unspoken crisis facing leaders, charities, and churches. And our guest today is Peter Greer. Peter's co-authored this new book. It's from Bethany House. He's also co-authored a great book called The Spiritual Danger of Doing Good. And we're going to have him share a little bit more about that story as well coming up here in the next half hour. Peter is the president and CEO of Hope International. It's a global nonprofit focused on addressing both physical and spiritual poverty through microfinance. He has a master's degree in public policy from Harvard's Kennedy School and has co-authored a couple of books. We're talking Mission Drift today. We've got some copies to give away of actually both books. If you'd like to sign up for that. Or if you have a question or maybe a comment for us, we'd love to have you join the conversation. It's 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Or if it's easier to just drop us a note, you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there. Send us a question. We'll talk more with Peter Greer in just a moment. Stay tuned. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Park. Sounds like a little drifting music there, Tim.
Oh, the mission thing.
Sure, the mission. Yeah. Oh, there we go. Okay, that's it. Trying to picture a surfer, probably, but no, that was a different one. Yeah. No, it was there. No. All right, it's the Upper Midwest. We, as much as we'd love to be thinking surfing, we're just hoping for 30 degrees again.
That's right.
That's all that we can hope for. Well, Peter Greer is president and CEO of Hope International. They're a global nonprofit focused on addressing both physical and spiritual poverty through microfinance. Actually, Peter and his family live near Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Talking with us today, he's written a couple of great books, The Spiritual Danger of Doing Good and the latest Mission Drift. He co-wrote that with Chris Horst. And Peter, maybe just say a little bit about, tell us about Hope International and maybe how you and the organization have had to guard against drift, because, this has been... you've been passionate about this from early on as kind of and you've seen it grow. How do you maybe measure success and stay true to the mission?
Yeah, so Hope was actually founded after the fall of the Soviet Union, and it actually was some staff members from Eagan Hills, Minnesota. So we have our roots in Minnesota, but they ended up going, Paul and Cindy Marty ended up going to Ukraine and starting this organization. And one of the convictions early on was that we wanted to go beyond handouts. We wanted to make sure that we were really helping families not just have something that would provide for them today, but really to go a step further. And so they stumbled upon this tool of microfinance, and so they ended up offering small loans and business coaching and saving services and ended up helping people not just have, as the Chinese proverb goes, not just a fish for a day, but they ended up starting fishing businesses that ended up providing for their families for a lifetime. But one of the other convictions right from the beginning of Hope International's story was that it was possible to gain the whole world, and yet we wanted to make sure that we were not missing the opportunity to introduce them to the hope, the only lasting hope, the hope that's found in Christ. And so as the organization was founded, there was a clear intentionality about wanting to see more change than just helping people start a small business, but really see them grow in relationship with Christ. And so one of the pieces that we thought about is so how do you actually do that? And that's where a lot of these conversations about mission drift started to take root, because we realized that it's hard, that there's no one thing that you can do, and there are so many pressures that you face. We've already talked about the financial pressure or the desire to have the right metrics that sometimes are hard to know if you're measuring what really matters, the full impact of the mission. So really, it was through the experimentation of how we grow an organization that is excellent at what we do in helping families work their way out of poverty, and at the same time never loses sight of the full mission, the desire to also see individuals grow in their relationship with Christ. And so a lot of what we talk about in the book are the lessons that we've learned from others, from other organizations that have managed that well to really implement their products and services with excellence, and at the same time never lose sight of who they were created to be. And so that's been a little bit of our process.
Well, you talked about sort of the right metrics. I mean, how do we define success? I mean, how do you measure success? Early on, as your organization, I mean, it was growing. You were seeing great results. Maybe working in areas where there hadn't been much success before, and then there was a time I know you had to kind of do some corrections and pull back. So, are we measuring the right things? Looking for success in the wrong places, maybe as donors or supporters.
My guess is that if you were to poll your listeners and ask them, how do they measure the effectiveness of an organization? The answers that I think would be most common would be, well, percent to program, how much money actually goes to the program and how much goes to overhead. It would be about growth. Are they serving more people than they were the year before? Is their budget increasing? And while important, those three indicators will tell you nothing about how well they are actually achieving their mission. They'll tell you nothing about the actual impact that's happening on the ground. And we found that mission-true organizations know that it's difficult to measure the impact of the families that they're serving, and yet even though it's difficult, even though it's going to be done imperfectly, it's too important to do nothing. So mission-true organizations have thought carefully about how they define their mission and then how they measure the results. And you're right, the story that that we share was a time where we were experiencing incredible growth. We were growing by more than 1,000 new families per month in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and we were operating in a place where everyone told us it's too difficult, it's too hard, it won't succeed, and yet numerically we were having great success. And yet after a period of years, as we were focused primarily on growth rates, on size of the budget, number of people served, we found that we had not actually created the right systems. We didn't have the right staff with the right depth, and we were starting to go off mission. And for us, that was a really important time, a time to admit failure, admit that we were going off track, and then make some changes. And so now everything that you'll see at Hope International, how we think about success, is in three buckets. The first thing is, are we Christ-centered in all that we do? We know how easy it is to lose sight of that, and so that's our first piece that we always look at. And we measure things that to give us an indication of whether or not people are growing in the relationship with Christ. And then the second piece is excellence. If we say our mission, if we're followers of Christ in the work that we do, and then we offer an inferior product, we actually just undermine our mission. So there should be no such thing as a poor performing Christian organization. That should be completely impossible. And then the third piece is, if we're Christ-centered, if we're doing our work with quality, then we believe we earn the right to grow. And so that's how we think about success, is not just letting growth rates blind us to whether or not there really is life change happening, and really if we're being true to the mission that we were called to do.
Well, I know you address the issue of pride. I mean, certainly in the book, the Spiritual Danger of Doing Good, which is really kind of all about that. And I'm sure that, you know, many leaders and even, you know, board members, I mean, it's easy to allow pride to really influence and maybe skew our judgment.
It is. And oftentimes it blinds us to so many issues. I remember that early on in my marriage, as Hope was growing, as I was focused so much on trying to build this organization, after my kids were in bed, my wife and I had a conversation that I'll never forget. And the essence of that conversation was that I was continuing to give the family leftovers. And I was focused so much on the organization that my ministry had become, in effect, my mistress. And that was a moment that I will never forget, a moment that I never want to repeat. And yet, if you look at my schedule and if you look at where my heart was and my attention, it might have appeared that I was doing all of this great service for God. And yet it was really more about me, about my ego, about my pride, than it was even about the organization that I was working with. And I think that is oftentimes so difficult to see in a ministry setting, where workaholism in a you know, corporation, maybe that's pride, but some people say, you know, that's a problem. And yet somehow within the ministry world, workaholism, even if it has nothing to do with the ministry, in some places is celebrated. So as an organization, we've thought long and hard about that. How do we make sure that this is a place of flourishing for the employees, as well as a place where we do work hard, we do serve with excellence, we do see lives changed all around the world, and yet remembering that ultimately it's just not about us.
You know, to get back on track, you know, you had one of those, you know, come to Jesus meetings, I guess we call those, with our wives, and grateful for when those happen. But can getting back on track or stopping the drift be done without some serious pain? I mean, you talk about Al Mohler and his example, but just what does that look like if we're really committed to getting back on the right path?
As we spend time looking at this issue of mission drift, there is no question, as painful as it is to protect against drift, the decisions that need to be made oftentimes are difficult decisions to stay on mission. That is so much easier than trying to come back to a mission. Most times, there becomes a point of no return that an organization has drifted so far that their new identity has superseded anything that they had in the past. And again, you think about Harvard University, the idea that somehow they would come back to their founding identity sure seems like an impossibility. And so I think it's healthy for us to realize it is much better to try and avoid drift as early as possible, because there's a compounding impact and it only gets more difficult as time goes on. And again, there comes a point where apart from some miraculous event, it is an impossibility. And so I think that's really the point, is for all of us, no matter where we are in this issue of drift, whether we're really strong and we thought about it with intentionality, the message is don't stop paying attention to it. Don't take it for granted. Make sure that your preferences don't become your convictions, don't become the preferences of the next generation and become irrelevant to the next generation after that. You have to constantly be coming back to the purpose and not take it for granted. And organizations that are starting to drift a little more, the message to them is it's not too late. Like right now, make the decisions, even if they're difficult, even if it means the organization shrinks in size, even if it means that there's a short-term disruption, it's not going to get easier and it's not going to resolve itself. And so really, that's the message. There's something that we all need to do if we desire to stay on mission. There's something that we need to do right now, today, in our decision-making to make sure we do not follow this well-worn path that so many organizations have wandered down of slowly moving away from what matters most.
In just a moment, we'll maybe talk more about some of those practical steps or get some ideas, maybe some first directions we can head when we talk about avoiding mission drift with Peter Greer. Peter, the president and CEO of Hope International, and he writes and speaks on these issues and the topic of faith and international development, co-author of several books, including The Poor Will Be Glad, The Spiritual Danger of Doing Good, and Mission Drift. And we've got some copies to give away, and you can join the broadcast. Sign up for a copy and join the broadcast. You have a question or comment, we'll get to April's question and comment here in just a moment. And you can join in at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. More with Peter Greer in a moment. Stay true to our calling to walk with the Lord day by day, and how that affects how that's lived out in our churches, our organizations, ministries. We're talking about mission drift today, the unspoken crisis facing leaders, charities, and churches. That's one of the new books written by Peter Greer, co-author of that, as well as The Spiritual Danger of Doing Good. And Peter is Hope International's president and CEO. Hope International is a global nonprofit focused on addressing both physical and spiritual poverty through microfinance. And Peter, we've sort of touched on some of those things that we must do to get back on track. Are there some first steps in terms of, here's what you recommend to start to get back or to keep drift from happening? What would be the first couple things you'd recommend?
I think the first thing is just to elevate the conversation. If the board, the leadership, if you as a supporter of organization have never had a conversation about this issue of mission drift, that really is the starting point to understand where are we? What steps have we taken to avoid drift? What really is our core mission? What would drift look like? Where might there be areas where we're susceptible? Maybe it's taking that questionnaire available at missiondrift.com. I think there are a lot of different ways to just start with a conversation and then not to be overwhelmed by this topic, but to say, what are a small number of really clear and practical things that we could do? And so for some, maybe it's just getting the founder to write a statement of saying, this is the story. This is why we were created. Maybe it's video archiving that and making it part of the orientation process for all new employees that would join you. Or maybe for others, it's looking at the way that they recruit board members. Maybe it's saying, do we have enough protection in place to ensure that the people that come in are really going to be the guardians of the full mission. For others, maybe it's employment. For others, maybe it's the culture piece. Organizations that seem to have an intentionality about praying together, we found that that was one of the common themes. So I think there's a number of options, and it's more looking at the options and then for each organization to say, again, not overwhelmed by we could do all of these things, but simply finding the opportunity to say we are going to do these things, and again, just to elevate the conversation.
Now, April, listening in the Moorhead area in Faith 1200, says, you know, it seems like people struggle with this issue too. Maybe going after jobs for money as opposed to using our God-given gifts and following his lead. Maybe just to share a thought about that.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And that was really the point, Neil, of writing The Spiritual Danger of Doing Good. It's really the application of these same principles in our own heart. And so I think April is exactly right. What we've been talking about at the organizational level, there is a lot of relevance at the personal level as well. And, you know, I enjoy that old hymn, right? Come thou fount of every blessing. Where what's one of the lines? It's prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. Here's my heart, O take and seal it. Seal it for thy courts above. I just love that recognition, that kind of honest recognition. I believe it was Robert Robinson who wrote that hymn when he was 22. And I love that he was honest enough with himself to say, man, this issue of drift, I see it in my own heart, and I don't want to drift. I don't want that to be my story. And in a similar way, that's what I hope too. I hope that my family sees a dad and a husband who is willing to make decisions to avoid the drift in my own life that we've been talking about at an organizational level. And yeah, I think that it's a great opportunity and invitation to not just think organizationally, but to realize this issue of staying mission true, it really starts with you, starts with me, and it starts in what is happening in our own hearts as well.
Sounds like we need some accountability partners, don't we? Some friends that we can call at 3 a.m. or that will tell us if we've got, you know, spinach in our teeth or some those kinds of things.
That's exactly right. Who hasn't had that opportunity where they go home and realize there's something in their teeth that everyone saw except for them? And yeah, that's a mark of a true friend. You know, the other thing is just the 3 a.m. friends. This was someone mentioned this to me, and it really resonated. He said, if it's 3 a.m. and you know you have a significant need, what are the names and phone numbers of the people that you know would get in their car at that exact moment and meet you there? And I think for a lot of people, it's a pretty short list of having that level of friendship, people that you would feel like they would want to be there at 3 a.m. And again, that's that level of friendship, that level of honesty to see things in your teeth. Oftentimes, we don't realize how much we need it until we need it. And at that point, it's oftentimes really, really difficult to get it. So there's absolutely a need for friendship, a need for real relationships, a need for people to be unimpressed with any good that we're doing, and people that love us enough to tell us the truth that might be difficult to hear.
Yeah, and as you said, just alluding to that old hymn, too, that recognizing that we are prone to wander, so not being afraid to recognize that we're not sinless, right? We all have propensities that aren't going to help us. We'll slide along with the culture if we don't work against it.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, is this something, can correction come from the bottom up, or does it need to be top down? If you know, if I'm on a staff of an organization, or, you know, maybe just a contributor to a ministry, you know, do I have a voice, and how can I use that voice?
Because one of our major conclusions as we looked at this was it's just a lack of intentionality. It's just you're not asking the questions until it's too late. You're not thinking about mission drift because there are so many other competing priorities for time and attention. And so I think an individual at any layer of the organization has the ability to raise the questions about mission, about purpose. And I think, this is not necessarily a top-down or a bottom-up to stay on mission. This is an everyone has to be in type deal. And so I would definitely not think that there's anyone who could not have a significant influence on an organization. And even in terms of supporters, after 1 year, I did a little Christmas video for Hope International to thank some of our supporters. And in that video, I did not talk very clearly about our purpose, about our identity. And I had one of our supporters, Greg, call me up and he say, Peter, thanks so much for the video. Thanks for the greeting. But you missed what was most important to me and my family of why we support you as an organization. And I can guarantee you, when I did the video the next year, I did it differently because I remembered how I had not effectively communicated the year before. And that was a supporter who had gave more than just the financial resources. He gave me an incredible gift by reminding me of who we are and making sure that we didn't miss any opportunity to clearly communicate that identity and that purpose when we are talking about the ministry that we work for, Hope International. So I think there's a role to play for supporters. There's a role to play for staff, no matter what level they are. There's a role to play for board members. And again, mission drift happens because of lack of intentionality. And so every group has the ability to raise the awareness of mission drift and then to ask questions of what are we actually doing to protect against it.
Well, Stan writes in, and it, I think, represents kind of the rub maybe of our conversation, because as an organization or ministry or nonprofit, as they mature, is it possible that the mission could morph or change or adapt? And I think that's we sort of talked about that at the beginning. I mean, how is drift different than change, and how do we adapt and adjust?
That's such a great point. I'm glad Stan raised it. Because, again, this is not saying that all change is bad. It's absolutely not saying that change is not necessary. You know, there's an interesting contrast of stories that might help with this. When Young Life was founded, this organization that reaches high school students primarily with the good news of Jesus Christ, they use barbershop quartets as the primary way that they would reach students. Now, they were not confused. As time went on, they said barbershop quartets might not be the most effective way to reach students, and so now they have social media. But it still is based at the primary purpose of reaching high school students with the good news of Christ. And so barbershop quartets was the means. It was not their mission. And they changed over time. But standing in stark contrast to that is what happened with the YMCA. George Williams founded the YMCA as a way to get displaced youth in London off the streets, as a way to get them into Bible studies and into relationship with Christ in a very similar way to the founding story of Young Life. And yet today, growing up, I went to the Y. I had no idea that there was any sort of a Christian identity. And over time, the means that they had of using sports as a way to reach individuals, somehow that replaced the primary purpose for which sports was used. And that's what we found. So to answer Stan's question, it's not an argument against change or adaptation. It's just being really clear, as you change, does this help you better accomplish the primary mission that you have, or is this somehow getting confused about the mission and the means that you have to accomplish that mission?
Is this, we've got a few minutes left. Does drift tend to happen through one person, or is it maybe someone in leadership, or it's a major donor or something, or is it something that just sort of happens as a group?
Yeah, it's hard to kind of find the origin of mission drift. I think in some places it is. It's the decision to say, we're going to grow no matter what. That's how we're going to measure our success. And then every decision is made, does this contribute to growth? And so if there's a supporter that wants to support you and they have certain conditions that might be pulling you away from mission, if your highest purpose is simply to grow, then you're going to take that money and slowly drift. In other places, one board member made the difference. In other places, as in the example that we talked about with VeggieTales, one hire can have a significant impact. And that's almost the most important piece of this conversation, Neil, is that, again, there is no one thing that you can do. It's a series of decisions at multiple levels, and they build on each other. And so the best thing that we can do is start paying attention to this issue, and then each of us ask, what are the decisions that I'm making? Is this helping us remain mission true, or is this inadvertently sowing the seeds of drift? And it really takes all of the different constituencies. It takes the supporters, it takes the staff, it takes the board to really pay attention to this issue of drift and then make the important decisions on a daily basis that protect your organization against losing what matters most.
Check out more information at missiondrift.com, missiondrift.com. That'll be a great resource for you to find out about the book and the survey as well. Peter, just got about 30 seconds left. What are you most excited about with Hope International these days?
You know, we're about to launch into a new country, Zambia. So that'll be our 18th country of operation. And even more than that, I really am excited about this big picture of what we're doing, of helping the church think differently about poverty, transitioning from a handout to a hand up, and just really, again, making sure that as an organization, we are staying mission true, we're doing our work with excellence, and then, Lord willing, we're helping a lot more families. We're on track to reach 1 million families by the end of 2015. And just really excited about that. So, Neil, thank you so much for having me. Just really enjoyed this conversation.
Likewise, great to visit with Peter Greer, President and CEO of Hope International and author of several books, including The Spiritual Danger of Doing Good and Mission Drift. And you can find out more about Mission Drift on their website, missiondrift.com.